Hello, and welcome to Conversations from Studio B on WOUB 1340 AM and online at woub.org. I'm Celeste Parsons with the ABC Players, Athenian Berean Community Players, and today we'll be talking with some of the cast and crew members for our upcoming production, final production of the season, William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, which will be performed at Stewart's Opera House in Nelsonville at 8 p.m. on May 10th through 12th and at 2 p.m. on May 13th. Adult tickets are $10 in advance and $12 at the door. Student tickets are $7 at the door, or special price $5 in groups of 10 or more if you reserve in advance. For reservations, you should call 740-753-1924 or visit www.stewartsoperahouse.org. Okay, I want to first introduce the people we have around the table here today. We have Ariel Rogers, who is our Kate. We have James Uto, our Petruchio. We have Carol Ault, who plays Baptista, and we have a very special part of the crew, Timothy S. Clue, who is a composer and has written us some actual original music for the play, following in a long tradition of composers who have written for Shakespeare. So we're going to talk. I'm going to talk to all of these people, but I'm going to take the director's prerogative to kind of introduce the thing by talking about what I saw as the key to this play. This is the first time I've ever directed Shakespeare, so it was a big challenge, kind of a leap of faith. And to me, the whole sense of the play depends upon the personalities of Petruchio and Kate. There's a real temptation to simplify things and simply play Kate as a hardcore man-hating woman who gets cowed into submission and then does a complete 180 turnaround and becomes this very submissive personality, and to play Petruchio as basically a drunken bully who's going to do whatever he needs to do to make the woman submit. There are a lot of problems with that, though. In the first place, it makes for a very boring story, and if Shakespeare is anything, he's not boring. But if all he wanted to do was write a play about a guy who wanted to marry a wealthy wife and did so, that's what he would have had to do. Petruchio could have walked up to Baptista and said, "Hi, here you got a daughter. Give me a dowry. I'll take her off your hands." And he could have then carted her home to his estate and stuck her up in a room and never had to have anything else to do with her, basically. But that doesn't make for much of a story. Also, we have Shakespeare with a history of having other very strong woman characters. Think of Portia in The Merchant of Venice, who's the one who really solves the whole court case and does it with flair and great intelligence. So I was looking for something else that also would perhaps be a little more in line with modern sensibilities that are in favor of having women who have something other to do other than be cowed down and beaten into submission. And what I decided was that you can read the play and see in it Petruchio as someone who really doesn't just want a wealthy wife. I mean, sure, he says in the famous line, "I come to wive it wealthily in Padua. If wealthily, then happily in Padua." But again, that's not all he wants, because there's so much wonderful language in which he really courts Kate. And so I see him as someone who decides that he'd rather have a companion that he can banter with and have a partner than just a submissive person who's going to deal with his every wish. And on the other hand, Kate, instead of being a man-hater for no particular reason, I see more as a strong, intelligent woman who, like many others of her type, gets fed up with being wooed for her money and asked to fit into this traditional female role of the girl who plays the flirt for all she can be. And her reaction to it so far has been to be angry, to be non-compliant, and who then discovers that she can enjoy doing this sort of game-playing, give and take back and forth with Petruchio. So that was where I started from when I began looking at how to put this play together. And if I could segue over to Ariel. Ariel, as Kate, can you tell us a little bit about what your background in theater has been, and then talk about what you found to be the challenges in approaching this role?
Certainly. My theater background, I graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in theater performance last spring, so spring of 2011. And I've also done summer stock theater in Monomoy in Cape Cod. And I've had a little bit of experience working with Shakespeare in the Parking Lot, which is the drilling company in New York. So that's my theater background.
Okay. And what did you find were your particular challenges in becoming Kate? Were you able to agree with my interpretation, dispute it, modify it? How did you approach it?
Well, I mean, when I first read the script before I came into auditioning and everything, if you read it just point blank, it's like, so she does do this 180 degree of like being the strong person and then becoming subservient, and that just doesn't fly with me. So I guess the challenges is how to craft the moment so that you see Kate change from this, I'd say, like, help me out here, kind of callous.
A shrew, maybe?
Thank you, a shrew. How do you make her from a shrew into, you know, a wife? And it's been challenging for me because, I'm very new to Shakespeare, and I'm very young and trying to figure it out. And I don't know, things can be interpreted several different ways, and that's what we've been encountering in rehearsal, is that perhaps Celeste will see it one way and I'll see it another way, and we'll have to come to a compromise on what the moment is and what we're really conveying. And I think another very challenging aspect of playing Kate is to make her a sympathetic character.
When she's being shrewish.
Right. So that to let the audience understand why she's being shrewish, what is the cause, and this is the effect of that cause. And to also make it funny, because it's a comedy, and it's lovely. So
it definitely. I should add here that Ariel is 4 feet 11.
That's very true.
And James Petruchio is?
I'm 5'10".
5'10". So there's some disparity there. And
yeah, she's shorter than I am.
Yeah, I know that. And I have to say, Kate, you do a wonderful job of projecting a much larger personality than your physical size on
stage.
Well, thank
you. I do my best.
that has been so much fun to watch, the interplay between the two of you, where this tiny little creature is defying and resisting all the importunity that Petruchio is putting on her. Well, James, let's move over to you. So you're Petruchio to this Kate. What is your previous experience on stage?
I have a BA in theater from SUNY Potsdam, which is basically in another world. And right after that, I had a great gig as George in Of Mice and Men for a theater called Pendragon in Saranac Lake, New York.
Oh, wonderful place.
Yes. Quite cold. It was nice. And then after that, I did Christmas Carol with them, too. And then after that, I got kicked around a bit, and I did a couple shows in Liberty, New York, and then I moved out to Ohio. And since I've been here, I've been with you guys a lot, and with OVST, I did To Kill a Mockingbird last year and was Bob Yule. And of course, O. Henry with this past Christmas season. So as much as I can possibly take.
A wide variety of roles. What have you wanted to do with Petruchio?
Mostly learn the lines, because he has a lot of lines. And like everybody else, I've never done Shakespeare either. So beyond learning the lines, learning what they mean, and then learning how to say them like, you have to learn the lines, learn what they mean, and then you have to learn how to say them and sound like you know what they mean.
And convey them to the audience who may not know what all of the words
in
them mean.
So yeah, and then on top of that, the audience doesn't know what language you're speaking in, so you have to you have to pull out all your other tools out of your toolkit as an actor to convey what you're saying, knowing that not only you, but the audience doesn't really understand the words you're using. So I think the biggest challenge to Petruchio has been the language of Shakespeare. The character himself is, he's a fun-loving guy who knows what he wants. He's not going to take crap from anybody. He's going to do what he needs to do. And I think that at the beginning of the show, he was going to marry a wealthy wife. And I think, you know, this has been my take. I think Catherine kind of wooed him a little bit. You know what I mean? So that I think something that we have created that's worked really well is that there's a give and take between Petruchio and Catherine. Not, you know what I mean? I'm not ruling her with an iron fist, although I did intend to and I did start to. But I think that to make it more interesting, as you say, Petruchio has to back off a little bit and play a give and take with Kate so that he can, like you said again, build a real relationship with her and actually end up – I say it at the end when Hortensio asks me, well, what does that mean? I come back with, it means peace and happiness. It means a good life, you know. And I think that's what Petruchio learns, is that I don't have to strong arm her and rule her with an iron fist. I can actually meet her on a common level, and then we can have a good time together.
Yeah, and you do have a good time together on stage. That is so fun to watch. I should make a little pause here and say that you're listening to Conversations from Studio B on WOUB 1340 AM and online at woub.org. I'm Celeste Parsons with ABC Players and some of the cast and crew from our upcoming production of William Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, which we're going to perform at Stewart's Opera House in Nelsonville, May 10 through 13. Over on the other side of the table here, I have Carol Ault, and Carol has a wide variety of experience with ABC Players, but you didn't originally even intend to audition, which surprised me greatly when I saw you show up at auditions and sit there and listen. Why did you not intend to audition, and what made you change your mind?
Well, I have a tendency to overcommit, as you know.
Don't we all?
Yeah. So I thought, you know, this is the spring for me to not do a spring production because I had so many other things going. And to be quite honest, I wasn't certain that I would be able to pull off Shakespeare. It's so foreign to me, as to many people. And the only reason I was at auditions, and I think Karen had ulterior motives, Karen Chan asked for a ride. And I said, sure, I'll take you to auditions.
Blame it on Karen.
And the whole time I'm sitting there, she's elbowing me, and I'm looking at everybody having so much fun on stage auditioning. I said, well, you know what the heck, I'll just go read and just have fun. And once I was up there, I was like, well, maybe I can do this. Okay, Celeste, if you have a little part for me, I would be interested. So I was hooked, as always.
Well, I'm so glad you were. What has been challenging and interesting to you about becoming Baptista and also sharing that role with Ruth Borovica, which you two are?
Well, it is a challenge not only to learn the language, et cetera, but to become a man, an old man. And so I have a great time watching. This is going to sound bad. I have a great time watching men. But I'm watching to see how they move and how can I change my movement and my posture and the way I use my hands to be more manly and to come up with a deeper voice than I normally have. It plays in my favor that I am naturally an alto, but it's still, it's that is a big challenge. It has been a delight to understudy Ruth. And Ruth Borovica is an amazingly talented and experienced actor. And I have learned so much from her that give me a bit of confidence trying to go into this role. So when we share, if Ruth is on stage, I'm watching like crazy and making notes of things that she's doing and little things that she does to bring Baptista alive that I can try to incorporate into what I do. And I'm not trying to mimic Ruth. I think that we will play Baptista in our own way, but with some similarities. And again, I'm just learning so much.
Which is one of the unadvertised, I guess you'd call it, things about trying something like Shakespeare. I mean, we've all talked about it's a challenge and you have to do all these things that you don't ordinarily have to do for a modern play. But it's a stretch. It's a learning experience. And it has been such a joy to me as a director sitting out front to watch so many things happening on stage that I didn't have anything to do with. I just put the people up there. And if you get a good cast, and I think we have a good cast, things happen that wouldn't happen otherwise. And so we get the interactions that all three of you have mentioned. We get interactions like Karen Chan, who is playing Grumio, working with Christine Brady, who's playing Curtis, to develop this lovely little comic interlude at the beginning of Act Two, where Grumio has been sent ahead of Petruchio and Kate to Petruchio's house to get things ready. And everyone there is waiting to find out what has happened to the master and who is it that he's got with him. And Grumio is just tired and cold and wants her mug of ale and fire. And it's a delight to watch. So, which brings up a whole nother thing about the balance between physical comedy and the language that we have to work with. And that was something that worried me to begin with. I really didn't want to go overboard on the...
But a lot of the physical comedy comes out of the language.
It does.
So you're, you don't want to go overboard and turn it into the Three Stooges. But at the same time, a lot of the physical comedy that we've incorporated is just lifted right out of the lines.
Exactly.
You know.
And in fact, sometimes I think you almost require, if not physical comedy, at least physical motion or expression or something to convey the meanings of some of those words that aren't as obvious to modern audiences as they might be. And that, again, people have met the challenge. I'm really real pleased with the way that's working out. I'd like to play now, if I could, as an introduction to talking to Timothy, a little clip from the music that he wrote for this show. So if we could cue that up. Is just a taste. And Timothy, I have to tell you, I was using some of this for the first time last night in our run-through of part two, and I had it playing before while people were gathering, and Carol walked in and listened for a minute, and then she said, "Oh, that's so cool."
Oh, well, so, I guess go accomplish.
It's just marvelous, Tim. It's so, it is Elizabethan.
The Shakespeare, I mean, just writing music for Shakespeare is, I mean, you start composing measures and then you wipe it away and say, no, that doesn't work. And it's almost, it's not just trying to fit the story, but I guess my intimidation was trying to write for such a legend. And so even turning over the music after hours of composition, I was still, you know, crossing my fingers after I left Celeste passing it over. And I was like, geez, I hope this is going to work.
I really think it's going to work beautifully. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about was when you start trying to compose something for a play, and I know you've done music for several other ABC's Players shows and many other shows for other theater groups, how do you approach it? What do you do to get started on this kind of a project?
Two things right at the beginning. I study the play and then watch any versions that I can to get myself familiar with it. And then there's just research of the times, like Shakespeare, you know, trying to find medieval and examples of it. What was the lifestyle back then? What type of effect did Shakespeare have on the people of the time at the Globe Theater? And it's there's a lot of work at the beginning. It's not like it's laborious, because you know you're going to have to create something out of it. And like I said, this is one of the only times that I was truly intimidated for the superstar playwrights. But once you get all that together, you try to bring that feeling across in the music. And like I said, very happy to hear that maybe I got close.
You said to me, I remember when we met to exchange the disc, that one of the things you found out, this was just a little musical tidbit, that there were a lot of triplets in the music, and this was just one little fact that you played in. And I know in that clip that we just heard, you could hear the 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3.
Yeah, much medieval music is lost, just because it wasn't written down. And even if it was written down, the type of scoring that it was may be extinct to understanding now. When they go back and they look at the music, the people who know better than I how to interpret that older music, they say that the thing that seems to fit with the flow the best is the use of triplets, which is really interesting, because triplets are almost just a color marking today in music, and it seems so dependent on it. But once I started to play along with that theme of dominating triplets, I mean, the style of the music just came right out. I mean, I was just there. And then it was just a matter of finding the right instruments.
And what basically did you use as instruments?
Well, I was going to do very raw at the beginning, very instruments that were timely at the time. You know, a primitive violin, a lute, and acoustic instruments like that would have been dry, kind of raw sounding. But the one thing that I also encountered is that the drama, at least the way we understand drama in plays today in musicals, was not really getting out. So I went ahead and took the liberty of throwing an orchestra behind it, and there was the key. So I guess I had to make one adjustment up for today's audience. So.
And would you, I know you have a website, would you like to give your website URL so that people who are interested in finding out more about your work can go there?
Oh, yes. It is timothysclugh.com, Timothy S, and then KLUGH.com. A lot of information there.
Okay. We're starting to run short on time, actually, and I would like to at least read down the list of other cast members. We've mentioned that Baptista is being played dually by Ruth Borovica and Carol Ault. Vincentio is Cecilia Rinaldi. Lucentio is Bethany Francis. This is one of our doing Shakespeare in reverse, sort of, and letting a female play a traditionally male role. Petruchio is James Hugo. We've already heard from him. Gremio is Joe Balding. Hortensio, Ken Bowald. Trinio is David Potts. Grumio is Karen Chan. Curtis is Christine Brady. The Pedant is played by Marlo Tinkham. Catherine is Ariel Rogers. Bianca is Jessica Cadle. The Widow is Kayla Stedman. And Nathaniel is Terry Smith. And this cast includes people from college age up into seniorhood. I guess I'll stop with that.
What exactly does that mean?
It changes all the time, you know? Yes. It's over a certain age, and then no one ever wants to say what the certain age is. So, but there are a number of seniors, including certainly myself.
I'm 39. Isn't that the age? So next year it'll be the second anniversary of my 39th birthday?
I suppose it will, yeah.
Welcome in.
Mm-hmm. Just to get everybody talking again, do you have a favorite moment that happens, either that happens during the play or that happened during rehearsal, something that you remember that you try to incorporate?
I think my favorite part of the play, at least that I'm involved in, is when Petruchio and Kate are bantering back and forth when they first meet each other, and just it's very funny. Like, Shakespeare's very, very, very funny, and the things that he says to me and that I say back to him are just lewd and mean.
It's a very dirty show.
It is a very dirty show.
In a very Shakespearean way.
Yeah.
It's kid-friendly. That's my favorite part, the banter back and forth. And it's the easiest to memorize, too.
And it has so much wordplay in it.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the puns and the not-quite puns where he uses a word and then he takes a word that sounds like that but means something totally different and uses that in the next line to change the subject. And it's, you really have to, as a friend of mine said once, see it several times over in order to catch all the bits and pieces. Carol? I'm sorry.
I love when you were traveling back to Padua and arguing about whether it's the sun or the moon. But I have to say, my favorite little moments here are when Vincentio comes on stage. And you just, Petruchio, say that he is a young woman.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, what? And, of course, poor Kate is having to agree with whatever you say. And then you say all of a sudden he's a man. And Vincentio goes, yeah, well, I'm a man. And you say, a very old man. He goes, what? But then when it plays out that you say, oh, yes, I can call you father because your son is married to her sister. And my reaction, if I were Vicentio, is, my son married the sister of a lunatic? Oh, my Lord, what am I going to do? And then, you know, you're bidding him, come on. He's going, okay, but I don't believe you because I think it's just in your nature to play jokes on people you meet. I love that. I think it's really just precious.
One of many delightful comic moments from ABC Players' production of The Taming of the Shrew, being performed at Stewart's Opera House in Nelsonville at 8 p.m. on May 10 through 12. And at 2 p.m. on May 13th, adult tickets $10 in advance, $12 at the door, student tickets $7 at the door, or $5 in groups of 10 or more if reserved in advance. For reservations, call 740-753-1924 or visit www.stewartsoperahouse.org. Thanks so much for listening to Conversations from Studio B on WOUB. I'm Celeste Parsons from ABC Players. And I've been talking with members of the upcoming production of Taming of the Shrew.